Namaste Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
The two verses we're reading this morning are text 20 and 21 from chapter 9. And these two verses are really getting closer and closer to Brahma's creation. In many different ways, Brahma has described the position of the personality of Godhead and the process of devotional service to Him, living entities that are suffering for want of devotional service. Incarnations of the Lord, because Garbhodakshayi Vishnu is the source or the father of the personality of Brahma. And Vishnu is the expansion of the Lord through which the avatars descend. And so he's spoken about the avatar forms in different species, yet the Lord is transcendental, His forms are transcendental, appearing within this world that He creates. So now where it's going, Brahma's prayers, I'm going to that very same form of the Lord that he sees before him, and is describing the function of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu in relation to creation. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the source of Brahma. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the source of the universes, multiple universes, excuse me, multiple planets that are part of the creation of Lord Brahma. Even before he creates, the Lord contains them within him. So it's something like before you even engage in devotional service, the potential to engage in that devotional service is within the Lord, and literally we're just an instrument to do that, whatever it is, that service that we do. So, text 20. Brahma prays, "My Lord, you accept the pleasure of sleeping in the water of devastation, where there are violent waves." Who can sleep in violent waves? The Lord can. "And you enjoy pleasure on the bed of snakes." Who would enjoy pleasure on a bed of snakes? The Lord does. "Showing the happiness of your sleep to intelligent persons," and his happiness of sleep is not ours, or our happiness of sleep is not the same as his. "At that time, all the universal planets are stationed within your abdomen." Note, they haven't been created yet, but they're stationed within his abdomen. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Short one. "Persons who cannot think of anything beyond the limit of their own power are like frogs in a well who cannot imagine the length and breadth of the great Pacific Ocean. Such people take it as legendary when they hear that the Supreme Lord is lying on his bed within a great ocean of the universe. They are surprised that one can lie down within the water and sleep very happily. But a little intelligence can mitigate this foolish astonishment. There are many living entities within the bed of the ocean who also enjoy material bodily activities of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. If such insignificant living entities can enjoy life within the water, why can't the Supreme Lord, who is all-powerful, sleep on the cool body of a serpent and enjoy in the turmoil of violent ocean waves. The distinction of the Lord is that His activities are all transcendental, and He is able to do anything and everything without being deterred by limitations of time and space. He can enjoy His transcendental happiness regardless of material considerations. And the next verse is immediately connected. O object of my worship, text 21, I am born from the house of your lotus navel for the purpose of creating the universe by your mercy. All these planets of the universe were stationed within your transcendental abdomen while you were enjoying sleep. Now, your sleep having ended, your eyes are open like blossoming lotuses in the morning. Very interesting first paragraph of the purport. Brahma is teaching us the beginning of the archana regulations from the morning, 4 o'clock, to night, 10 o'clock. I didn't get that from the verse, but that's what Prabhupada is saying. Early in the morning, the devotee has to rise from his bed and pray to the Lord, and there are other regular principles for offering Mangala Arati early in the morning. Foolish non-devotees, not understanding the importance of Archana, criticize the regular principles, but they have no eyes to see that the Lord also sleeps. By His own will. The impersonal conception of the Supreme is so detrimental to the path of devotional service that it is very difficult to associate with stubborn non-devotees who always think in terms of material conceptions. And the second paragraph is expanding on that. They always think in terms of material conceptions. Impersonalists always think backwards. They think that because there is form in matter, spirit should be formless. Because in matter there is sleep, in spirit there cannot be sleep. And because the sleeping of the deity is accepted in archana worship, the archana is maya. All these thoughts are basically material. To think either positively or negatively is thinking materially, meaning speculating this way, that way. Here, in these verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that archana is recommended. He's like really focusing on deity worship. We'll come back. Before Brahma took up the task of the creation, he found the Lord sleeping on the serpent bed in the waves of the water of devastation. Therefore, sleeping exists in the internal potency of the Lord. And this is not denied by pure devotees of the Lord like Brahma and his disciplic succession. It is clearly said here that the Lord slept very happily within the violent waves of the water, manifesting thereby that He was able to do anything and everything in His transcendental will, by His transcendental will, and not be hampered by any circumstances. The Mayavadi cannot think beyond this material experience, and thus he denies the Lord's ability to sleep within the water. His mistake is that he compares the Lord to himself. And that comparison is also a material thought. The whole of the Mayavadi school, based on not this, not this, not that, neti, neti, is basically material. Such thought cannot give one the chance to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead as He is. End of purport. Although the previous verses that one reads carefully, just like by reading the earlier cantos of the Bhagavatam carefully, when one gets to the 10th canto, one should have a clear and proper understanding of the transcendental nature of Krishna's pastimes. So similarly, these few verses in the beginning of the 9th chapter have helped prepare the reader for the process of creation, or one that might not understand the transcendental nature, janma karma chame divyam, so his karma, his activity of creation is not karma, or it's divyam. Just as we were reading before, Krishna's statement in the 4th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that although he is engaged in creating the four orders of social life, he's yet the non-doer and he's not bound by any of these activities. Namam karmani limpanti name karma pale svraha. In this 4th chapter, the Krishna said that one can understand the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities doesn't come back, doesn't take another material body. And that their activities are also transcendental. So their activities are not binding them. Just by this one little bungee cord, very strong one, having a material conception of God, so that when one hears the revealed scripture describing his activities, beginning with his activities of creation, therefore that's something that's very proximate to us. The activities of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan may seem very distant to us, and that may seem also imaginative and, you know, a creative poet and so forth, to at least a mundane person thinking that way. So what about things more proximate? How to understand that properly? Although the transcendence of the Lord, transcendental position of the Lord has been like 15 verses placing clearly the Lord in the transcendental position. Now, when his act of creation is going to be explicitly narrated, including creating Brahma and how all of that is done, Prabhupada in both of these purports he's got his hammer. And saying these are not imaginative. The problem of, so there's these previously discussed, these in the purports, these two classes, the non-devotee and the impersonalist, who's just like definition by negation. Personalities. So it's born of, or the product of, speculation. Here's something material. Spirit must be without it. So there's sleep here, so you can't have sleep. There's form here, you can't have form. Whatever's here, you can't have it there. But it's just the other way around. Whatever is here must have its source of emanation. So there must be these things. The things over here are a perverted reflection of there, so the sleep of the Lord is transcendental. And the sleep over here is not transcendental. It's another kind of sleep. It's another kind of experience. Another kind of behavior. And it's the opening and closing of his eyes. It has nothing to do with his seeing and not seeing. He can see with any of his limbs. So we can't do that, and therefore God can't do that. So the process of definition by negation is as being repeated here, it's material. It's the flip side of the same coin. Here's heads, here's tails. This can't be this. Definition by negation is material. And that's the process. So what's the result going to be? Material. And for the materialist, I can't do such and such, and therefore it's fiction. I mean, basically that's it. Their program. It's bringing God down, it's envy, bringing God down to one's position. Or pumping oneself up to God's position, one or the other. It's envy. And the consequence is no devotional service. The consequence of that is I can't possibly understand without devotional service, without the purification of heart that comes from devotional service. I can't understand. And so the way of understanding is not by speculation. It's not by intellectual accomplishment. It's like, reaching the sky by putting up a stack of telephone books. You're not going to reach the sky that way. Or even heaven. Both in the Vedas, in Ravana's plan to build a staircase to heaven, or the biblical description of the Old Testament is the Tower of Babel. They wanted to do the same thing, a tower that would go to heaven, and they all went crazy. That's why they called it the Tower of Babel. They're just babbling. You can't ascend even into the heavenly regions, what to speak of the transcendental region, by that method, by the ascending method. It's like Brahma got it. But, most people don't get it. They keep trying. It's like very determined. Whenever I read the description of Jarasandha being defeated so many times, I think, boy, devotees should be so determined. Because materialists are so determined. He was completely wiped out. Just standing alone, his entire army demolished by one person, Krishna. And his other associate, anyway, is wiped out, finished. And he was going back thinking, oh, now I'm humiliated. So I throw in the towel and just give up this. But his ministers were pumped him up. No, you can do it. You're great. Yeah, I'm great. I can do it. So he gathered armies. Whatever the number was, 21 times, some number of times. Relentless. Smashed. And relentless and smashed and relentless. See, he didn't give up. And he wasn't a devotee. He didn't have Krishna on his side. He didn't have that confidence. Krishna is going to protect me. He just was a demon. Dvanyak people, their determination for sense gratification is so strong. Remember when all that Y2K business was going on? Do you remember all that? I was completely convinced that if it was a real problem, they'd figure out a way, because their sense gratification is too dear to them. And that realization was in the year 2009. I took a flight I can't even remember why I did it, but it was Christmas morning. So on Christmas Eve, you know, everyone's partying, and Christmas morning, the flight was out of LaGuardia Airport at 6 o'clock. So I had to get, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning on Christmas Day. And I went in at 5 o'clock, and there were lines of people lined up outside on the sidewalk just to check in their luggage on Christmas morning at 5 o'clock. And then there was a Northwest flight, so it went through the hub of Minneapolis. When you got to Minneapolis, it was whatever it was, because it's 1 hour early, and it was like 7 o'clock in the morning. And the airport was stuffed with people sitting down, eating in all those eating places and shopping. It's just like, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning on Christmas morning. I became convinced these American people, they're so determined for sense gratification, they'll figure out a way to get over Y2K, no problem. And the economy collapsed. You know, another devotee was sharing that's somehow or another they'll figure out a way. Because their sense gratification is so dear to them. Dearer than life itself. It's like what they say, what you say about someone that you love. So that's someone that's something they love. It's dearer to them than life itself. They can give up their life before they can give up sense gratification. So determined. And persons that have that disposition, how are they going to understand? And Krishna, Matirna Krishna Paratakswatova, and to the degree that we also hold on to a bodily conception, and with that, the idea of becoming the enjoyer through sense gratification and primitive activities, and all the things that are in the category of mind, progress in Krishna consciousness is not possible. It's just not possible. And to understand these descriptions of who the personality of Godhead is, we'll fall into one of those, this pit or that ditch or, you know, some dark place. Not getting it, doubting it, like, you know, disturbed, not clear, maybe just like skipping over it because we can't figure it out. Just going on. Trying to be nice devotees. But it's necessary to hear properly. This is... There's a number of chapters in this third canto that are dealing with this subject of creation. And it's not like, you know... It's not as fun as Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Krishna looks really fun. This is like, you have to keep chewing to get the juice. But it's to help us have the proper conception of Krishna's identity, proper conception of Krishna when we're chanting Krishna's holy name. As was mentioned in the previous verse, he whose potencies are unlimited, his names have all those potencies, and his names can deliver one from the clutches of material existence. The potency is there. Carry one completely into transcendence. Potency is there. So, side by side with the chanting of Krishna's names is this teaching of the Bhagavatam to help us have a spiritual conception of the Lord over hearing. Then in turn have a proper conception of this world. So, Brahma is speaking, I'll read it specifically, Udarastha Tasmai Namastha Udarastha Bhavaya Yoga. So Udara, just like Damo,
Uttara.
Right?
Damodar.
The Lord who is he's the Lord who around his Udra he was bound.
Damodara.
So Udrasta, the universes which Brahma is going to create, or excuse me, the planets which Brahma is going to create, are within his abdomen. His Udra. Got a big abdomen. Planets within his abdomen. The whole universe that Brahma is going to create. But it's not, besides it's a big abdomen, or it's like, you know, the capacity is big. It's not in the manifest state, it's in the unmanifest state. And so it's both the ingredients in the unmanifest state and the product in the unmanifest state. So, in other words, Brahma is not doing something imaginative himself or self-creative. He's an engineer. He's taking the plan, he's taking the ingredients, he's taking the capacity, he's taking the intelligence, and he's assembling it. So the Lord is fully cognizant of all of that. And Brahma is acknowledging. And another dimension here is this is spoken of already, but this sleep, because he speaks of it many times, Prabhupada in his purport, and both of the verses speak of it. So it's important. It's yoga nidra. Nidra means sleep, and yoga is, we say, mystic slumber. It's transcendental. In this material world, sleep is ignorance. And the spiritual world, or Lord Vishnu's sleep, is transcendental. And you take so many other things. In this world, stealing is unlawful and sinful. And Krishna's stealing is very nice and worshipable. So how the original, or the spiritual tree and the reflection of the spiritual tree in this realm, the material realm, how the two correlate, it doesn't even work just by inference. Like this matches that. But we can know in principle whatever's here, it exists in the spiritual realm, otherwise it doesn't exist. But how it exists in the spiritual realm, not easy to understand. Not by speculation, and not by neti-neti, and not by giving it a bad name. During that mystic slumber, specifically described in Brahma Samhita, is the Lord, in this case, Karmadakshaya Vishnu or Mahavishnu, either there Lord Vishnu is enjoying with his internal potency. And that enjoyment with his internal potency is not the same, the form of it is not the same as Lakshmi and the goddess of fortune and Narayana and Vaikuntha or Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. It's different.
It's a yoga nidra enjoyment. And his way of enjoying is different, and his function is different. But the principle is not different. The Lord enjoying with his internal potency. And by his internal potency, when his internal potency becomes transformed, it becomes external potency. Like the description in the 10th canto, the second chapter of the 10th canto, there's the description of Krishna instructing his internal potency, Yogamaya, to take up some service. He calls her, she comes, he says, here's some service for you, the second series of services for you. One, my brother Balaram is in the womb of Rohini. Here's the service. Transfer Balaram from the womb of Rohini, from the womb of Devaki to Rohini. Balaram is in the womb of Devaki. Transfer him to the womb of Rohini. And he's heavy, but you can do it. I empower you to do it. And then the next service is, then you appear in the womb of Mother Yashoda. And then, after you take birth, I'll arrange for Vasudev to come and replace you for me, and then you'll be brought back by the side of Devaki. And then Kamsa's going to come and try to kill you, but don't worry, because you're my energy, you can't be killed. And after he fails, you'll go throughout the land and be known as various names of Durga, the material energy, the goddess of the material energy. But he's speaking to Yogamaya. So the Lord's, Prabhupada gives this example of electrician can take electricity, one energy, and either make something hot or make something cold, because he knows how to do that. So Krishna, similarly, he knows how to make his energy do this or do that by his will. So, yogamaya samavrata, naham prakasha sarvasya, yogamaya samavrata. Yogamaya, we're accustomed to hear and think of yogamaya as the internal potency of Krishna by which he allows his devotees to forget that he's the personality of Godhead and have more intimate relationship. They become covered by his yogamaya for intimacy's sake. But there's another action of yogamaya, and that's when you can't even recognize Krishna, he's right in front of you. Or in the pages of the Bhagavatam, you can't recognize him by the influence of maya. And when you're in maya, you don't recognize that you're in maya. What to do? Somehow become fortunate and have the association of somebody that's not in maya, and they can help you understand that you're in maya by the influence of the internal potency, by association. That's our program, Krishna consciousness. By some good fortune, get good association. Get a book, but you know, then you can read the book and you don't get it. So you need association. And Prabhupada is giving us association through his purports. And some persons can take that properly and make spiritual progress. And some persons are stubborn. So we should give up being stubborn, and we should take the position of receiving the association that's provided by our disciplic succession in these purports so that we can properly see, in this case, the what the process of creation actually is, and then further what our position actually is, and further how our service is similarly manifest if it's done properly in devotional service, and continuing on in realization of our relationship with Krishna. Bhagavatam is giving us that opportunity. Even more unqualified and misguided and a little stubborn, a little foolish, but not really, a little proud, not wanting to acknowledge that, struggling. Still, the Bhagavatam is extending that to us, that opportunity. Okay, any discussion? Yeah.
So, Guru Maharaj, when I am in Maya and someone is trying to help me, and if I don't process it and put it aside and go to bed, that means I'm not overcoming that situation. I'm just
resisting.
Yeah.
So what's the question? There's two options: accept or reject. What's your question?
Like when you said you read the book and nothing happens even during that time. Take the association. So, taking the association means with the association we try to process the situation and come to spiritual conception. Is that the right process, a method, or?
It's two. It's just take Prabhupada's words. Try to understand. Mm-hmm. So, that sounds like ascending. Like I'm here and I want to get up there, so it sounds like ascending. But it not ascending, is we use our faculty of intellect, whatever Krishna has endowed us with, to do our best to look from different angles. That's another phrase. Examine from different angles, so we're examining. But there's also a receptive, there's like, you know, left brain and right brain. There's the receptive capacity of setting aside one's ego that says, yes, I can understand anything, I'm really good, I'm smart. So set aside that ego while we're trying to understand and hear, just hear. Just here, and at the same time try to understand what you're hearing. But we have to use a faculty or a capacity that's not the same as something that's an academic subject that we study in school. It's different. We still use our intellect, but not in this. In the same manner. So the receiving part is open, is openness, just taking in the sound. It's just like chanting. There's chanting, and there's receiving that sound vibration. But there's something that we do, and there's something that we receive at the same time. We're chanting, and we're hearing. And the most important part is we're hearing. And when we're chanting, the important part is that we're calling, like, you know, the feeling in the making of that sound vibration, like the conscious awareness of what we're doing, not just making a sound. So not just using our some portion of the material energy or called the intellect and trying to, you know, encompass this subject matter. Then dissect it into different parts and then put it back together again, and now we understand it. Not like that. But with spiritual intelligence that Krishna gives, because if, you know, if we're a devotee, Krishna will then provide us with that by which we can see and we can understand, we can grasp. It's, you know, it's gradual, but that's the method. And the receiving part is it's more difficult because we're conditioned. We're conditioned to like being an enjoyer and grabbing hold of something so that we can be the enjoyer of that something. Like, so being a receiver of Krishna's mercy is, you know, we're not trained up in that one. We have to cultivate, practice that receiving of transcendental knowledge that illumines our consciousness, illumines the soul.
How do I know I'm downgrading my free will in service of Krishna? Because some of the situations where I think I'm doing something but, you know, being content, or in the process I feel I'm goofing up something there, or I'm not doing it properly. So how do I, is there any parameters, anything which to look for? I can do something that is, I'm doing really for Krishna, or is it, you know, still mine?
Well, there's two like really simple litmus tests. One is my enthusiasm for devotional service is ever increasing. It's not up and down. And another is my attraction for material sense gratification is diminishing consistently. Like over time. And that's just a simple paraphrase of bhakti parishano bhavo virakti ranyatracha, but it's practical. It's a little difficult to use those litmus tests in the stage of anishita bhakti because there's up and down. But that's, you know, that up and that at the amplitude of the up and down diminishes. The sine curve amplitude diminishes. That's another sign. Steadiness is approaching. Okay.
I had a follow up question to the discussion about calling out to the holy name and receiving it. Calling out is more with the feeling of being totally dependent upon shelter of Krishna.
Yeah, if we're doing it in an emotional way, yeah.
And also letting go of the conception that I can do it on my own.
Yes, that's right, that's right, that's right, that's right. Being dependent means I can't do it on my own. Another way of saying the same thing is, as Prabhupada described, like a child calling for the mother. That's calling out. And the language is not, you know, the help, and then there's like mommy, and there's ah, you know, so it's whatever the language is, it's the emotion of calling out. And then this is Krishna, so it's, you know, it's clear who my shelter is, and it's help, Krishna.
Chewing the chewed example that was talked about. So, someone might think that the devotional service activity is also repeating and it is also same thing.
No.
So is it because they are transcendental, that's why we always find more joyful in those things?
Yeah. The chewing the chewed example is applied explicitly with persons who are seeking sense gratification through the same old sense gratification program that they've done countless times. Mechanical devotional service is not exactly chewing the chewed. It's you know, our consciousness is dull and we're under the cloud of anartas, and so that which is joyful is not experienced. We're not accessing that joyfulness because of our own anartas. But it's not the same. That's why I said no right away to the first thing. It's not, but the all-attractiveness of devotional service is both the process and the object of the process. Because Krishna is ever fresh, then the experience of devotional service is ever fresh. Like what we, for example, reading some verses from Bhagavad Gita or some scripture. You read it and you get a, you know, particular appreciation, come back and read it again later to get another appreciation. It's ever fresh. There are certain themes that, but you know, the way to see them and express them and experience them, and it's ever fresh. It's not material. Anything on this side? Yes.
Good morning. But chanting, along with your prayer, it's really helping to focus. But at the same time, I'm having one thought like that. I'm not hearing my voice.
Why not?
Meaning like, because your voice is pulling.
Ah, okay. So, therefore what?
It's okay.
You should hear your voice. It's, you know, if you're hearing the holy name, that's good, but you can just like sit there and hear the holy name and you're not chanting. You have to chant and hear your voice. So maybe don't do that, or do it a little bit, or keep the volume low, or, you know, adjust how you're doing it so that you're hearing your voice. It's okay? Well, you're asking the question, I'm giving an answer. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, my question is regarding gratitude. Actually, like, I've been observing this, like, when I have feelings of gratitude, like, sometimes it is a little natural. So,
sometimes it's a little natural.
Yeah,
what about the rest of the time?
What happens during those moments? What happens is actually there is actually more willingness or wanting to do services which I would be unwilling to do.
And that's natural.
And also, like, or else even if I do those services, it will be more out of sense of duty. That's all. And the other thing is, like, it fosters remembrance of Guru and Krishna, like, while doing those services.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, for me, like, holding on is so strong. So it becomes...
For you, what was the last part?
Holding on to certain conceptions of
okay.
is so strong. So during when those feelings arise, like there is more receptivity. That's what I feel, and I.
There's more receptivity when you're holding on to conceptions.
Receptivity while hearing, and also to let go of those. What happens is like when these feelings are present, like when the feelings of gratitude are absent. So even when I write the gratitude journal or I mention the list of gifts and everything, I feel like more. It's more in the paper rather than
more.
More in the paper.
In the paper.
Uh-huh. I'm writing.
Theoretical.
Okay. I mean, in the sense, like I'm writing the journal, gratitude journal,
giving
the gift.
Okay.
But it's not actually moving my heart, which I feel. So my question is actually how to sustain those feelings.
Pick up Krishna consciousness. You just keep abhyasa. You just keep with sincerity. You keep practicing. It's not your effort alone. It's mercy. You combine the two, your effort, sincere effort in Krishna's mercy, and then it will sustain. That's Krishna consciousness. But, you know, what you're doing is just fine. And increase the sincerity, or you can say like your question itself is based sincerely wishing for that Krishna consciousness to awaken. It's not an effort alone that can do it. So become a more qualified receiver, and you can do that by continuing to practice sincerely. And how long will that take? As long as it takes. That's how long I'll continue, because I'm very determined and sincere about wishing to achieve Krishna consciousness. On the opposite side, don't become discouraged that I'm not Krishna conscious yet. You know, my contaminations are whatever they are, and my capacity to sustain sincerity is what it is. It's limited. But let me continue, hope against hope, like that, as the aspiration increases. It's not that the goal becomes further away, but I realize my limitations more acutely, and the covered state of consciousness that I'm normally operating in. Oh my goodness, I have much further to go than I thought. Don't become discouraged, but like, you know, increase one's determination, one's effort, one's calling to Krishna. Just continue in that direction. And purification is taking place by doing that. The unsteadiness is due to anarthas. Because anishtha is on the other side of anartha nivritti. It's due to my own impurity. If there was more purity, it would be more steady. But I continue to sincerely apply the process and call sincerely for Krishna's mercy. Okay. Last question.
Well, I have a question regarding the transparency.
Transparency in what?
Transparency in, like, how I hear this transparency word over and over again in many lectures, that we have to maintain transparency in our dealings or are in our relationship, so I'm trying to understand, is there something related to the level of devotion or...
No, it's level of purity and more precisely, I mean to say purity is devotion, but how that term is used may depend upon the circumstance of using it. Like, there may be transparency in representing the disciplic succession. That kind of transparency. Or another transparency is might an application of being forthright and honest with oneself and with the persons who you're in a relationship with. That's transparency. Self-honesty and honesty with others instead of self-delusion and or delusion of misleading others or not disclosing. That's, you know, like, you know, financial dealings with dealing in the world. Transparency is, you know, you're honest in your dealings. I make the declaration of my earnings and pay my taxes, and you know, you can look at my books, there's transparency. Some auditor can come and check everything, it's transparent. This is what I reported, this is what's in the books. And there isn't something else that's going on that's not reported. That's transparency. It's, you know, it's honesty, purity, no deception. Let's say, you know, you're conducting your Bhakti Vriksha group. You should be conscious to be transparent. It's not me, and, you know, you're not changing the message, you're just transmitting the message. That's transparency. And, you know, ego's out of the way, and editing is like something you don't do. And you're striving for that transparency. You're, as we were saying yesterday, you're but an instrument. But that's nice, being an instrument of the disciplic succession. Very nice. And that requires transparency. That requires purity. You know, little servant, humble servant. That's transparency. No ego, false ego, no pride, just carrying out the service. That's transparency, representing disciplic succession. And if some appreciation comes, oh, you something, something. It's such a nice job. And it's just like, it doesn't go to you, it's transparent. I'm the postal peon. It's the disciplic succession. That they're awesome. I'm just delivering the letter here. But I'll pass on your appreciation to those who deserve it. The real people. The disciplic succession. I'm just striving to become a little purified by this effort. Transparency. No ego. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.